Thanks for coming. We appreciate you being here today. And to start out with, we'll look at the minutes for the June 3rd meeting. If anybody's looked at those and is prepared to make a motion to approve them.
I'll make a motion we approve the minutes for meeting.
Motion by Mayor Catlin.
Second.
Second by Commissioner Snow. All in favor?
Aye.
All right. Okay. We'll then go on to item two under planning. Consider request from Santa Clara to shift funding from Pioneer Parkway shared youth pass to the Tuacon Wash Trail. Is that not right?
You have the.
It's a five county LG meeting. There's the wrong agenda then. Well, we'll try a different agenda then. Okay. Well, it was the June 16th meeting instead of the 3rd, so.
There is an updated agenda.
Okay.
No, that's August 5th.
Yeah. Okay. Well, we'll all get on the same agenda here, and then we'll solve things we don't need to take care of. So, okay, we took care of the minutes, so it was June 16th rather than the 3rd, so we'll have to make sure that's noted in the minutes. Okay, introduction of Kelly Lund and Ivan Barrero from FHWA.
Can you come up the front, Kelly?
Yeah, come up.
The clerk, where are you at now?
It's a different agenda.
Okay.
Yeah, she's going to get some others for you.
I have to pay attention now.
Yeah, yeah. You got to listen.
So Kelly Lund is our Federal Highways representative. He occasionally will join us online, but I wanted to introduce him in person.
Thank you.
And Ivan is not able to make it?
Yeah, he had surgery. He couldn't be in a car that long.
Sorry, we're from Salt Lake. We couldn't hear you.
Kelly Lund.
Kelly Lund with Federal Highways. Kelly, do you want to tell us real quick about the Federal Highway involvement with the MPO?
Sure. So most of the stuff that the MPO does in their work tasks, like their tips, their long-range plans, their work programs, we have a guidelines from the Federal Highways, which is 23 CFR 450. Sorry, I had to say that, but it's a code of federal regulations, and it says everything in there, how we work with the MPO and how the MPO's developed and what they're producing and how they do it. So we kind of help Myron out through that process and make sure that he has the right stuff submitted to us, like the long-range plan, the tips, the work programs. And that's what this body votes on at the end, so it gets sent up through us and back to headquarters. That's pretty much in a nutshell. I know you had a lot of stuff.
Thank you.
Anything else?
Thanks, Kelly. Uh-huh. Appreciate you being here. Okay, item number C, consider request from Santa Clara to shift funding from Pioneer Parkway shared youth path to the Tuacon Wash Trail. Is that you, Mayor, or is it?
That's me. I'll take it.
I was going to make him do it.
Santa Clara City received an MPO funding share to build Hamblin Parkway.
Are we talking about Hamblin Parkway or the trail right now?
Are we talking trails?
I think trails.
Yeah.
Sorry, let me.
Trail to begin with. Pioneer Parkway shared youth path.
Sorry, wrong project. There we go. I'm not sure if you can see this real well. We we've put some MPO funding to the trail along Pioneer Parkway. And the engineer's estimate on that project came back, and the estimate of the project exceeded available funding for the project. And so we talked about this at our DTAC meeting several times and tried to figure out what could we do with that funding to have a complete project with existing monies. And Casey Stratton came back and indicated that he would rather that we could build the Tuacon Wash Trail. And help me, Mayor, is that this blue line here?
No, it should be the dashed line, the orange dashed line going north south, basically, up in the...
Oh, up here on the wash.
Yeah.
Right there on the Tuacon Wash.
Yeah.
Okay, so the Tuacon Wash Trail would basically connect a larger trail system from the east with a different trail system to the west, and so with that trail in there, it would essentially connect a trail all the way through Santa Clara from the east boundary to the west boundary. The advisory committee went over this with a fine-tooth comb. They looked at the engineer's estimates for this particular trail and determined that that would be a really good fit for our funding. And so the Santa Clara City's request was then to change that funding from one project to the other. It was endorsed by the advisory committee and comes with their recommendation.
Can I just ask what type of trail is it? I mean,
it's an asphalt trail. Yeah, it's like a trail town. Yeah, we were really hoping to do the Pioneer Parkway one. It was actually going to be like we're going to expand the road and make that a trail and stretch it to be a trail. And that would help us with. We have a lot of cyclists on Pioneer Parkway that have lots of close calls. So it's there's not a large, you know, side of the road. But yeah, fortunately, costs went up dramatically for that. So this is a really good alternative.
What trail is this going to get to on your end?
So I know on our side, I'm not sure on the island side, maybe Mayor Smith would know, but it's connecting to our system through all that work that runs, that goes underneath Pioneer Parkway and then loops. And so it'll get you all the way down to like the high school and onto the St. George Trail Network.
So it does connect over to the major St. George Trail working up that way?
Yeah.
Is that great?
And it connects, I think it's a connected intersection.
Okay, any other questions?
So we would be seeking a motion to approve the switch.
Are you ready for that motion?
Yes. Go ahead.
I would make a motion that we approve the request from Santa Clara to shift funding from the Pioneer Parkway shared use path to the Tuacon Wash Trail.
Okay, we have a motion by Councilman Ivey.
I'll second it.
Second by Mayor Smith. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, thank you. Item D, consider request from Santa Clara City to reduce the scope of PIN 20938 Hamlin Parkway, Highway 91 to Red Mountain Drive. The new project would be built on Hamlin Parkway from Rachel Drive to Red Mountain Drive.
So this is another project that is a request from Santa Clara City. We put out some approximately $3 million worth of MPO funding to the project on Hamlin Parkway. Again, the costs are eating our lunch, and we're not able to do the whole project with the available funding. The proposal is that instead of doing this section all the way through, that we build the section from Rachel Drive over to Red Mountain Drive. which would get us across the wash and tie us into the project on the north, east, that would be built by developers at a date coming soon with that project, right? So in other words, we're asking to change the funding to move it to this section through here, from Rachel Drive on the west to just across the wash on the east.
So it's the same amount of funding for a shorter piece, is that over?
Yes.
Is there a bridge on that wash, or how?
That's this.
Yes,
wash.
There is a bridge. I mean, you could do it with box culverts, but you probably do it with box culverts.
So on this far side, we'd get across the wash with that bridge. Bridge or culverts. We're thinking culverts to get across there. At the end of the day, this section over here from Old 91 to Red Mountain Boulevard, and this is very confusing to novice. This is Red Mountain Boulevard on the west side. Red Mountain Drive is over here on the right. Don't forget.
You guys don't like to use different names, do you? You like that Red Mountain?
Good question, yeah.
Everything in this county is red dirt something.
Yeah.
Red cliffs, red hills, red mountains.
$3 million, 2.8 was that we want to get a quarter of the project, huh?
Yeah.
Holy crap.
Yeah.
So on the segment by developers, is the timeline lining up well with us? Is kind of their motivation to do this, or is it more?
Is it part of the development?
That's a question for the
yes.
mayor.
You're talking about Black Desert?
Yes, that's
I. Yeah, that's part in there. Chuck can probably speak more specifically.
Is it specific to how much is built? The trails built? Is that the
So this funding is for the road, for a three-lane road, and the funding is specific for the road. Was that your question? Now.
Well, it's just interesting to see, like, with the development, how much of the roadway is completed along the project.
Right.
They are supposedly really, really close on doing that development. They claim that they would be further along right now, but they spent the last year or two working out a deal with Black Desert Development. Of course, you never know with development, right? Like. The world could turn upside down in 2 months and then everything kind of shuts down. So there is some risk there. But they appear to be ready to move dirt like right away.
Is it necessary? Does the road make sense without the developer reporting?
I would say no. I think we would want to see that the rest of that road is going to go in. But how many years away are we from this funding? I mean, we're still.
Thanks for clarifying that.
Could we make it contingent? If a lot of voted, could we make it contingent to once the developer has started or finished the road, that then we would approve that?
I think that would be wise.
Yeah.
The funding is current funding.
Yeah,
it's right now.
Mm-hmm. It is this year funding,
yeah,
but it's
26,
not
27. Mm-hmm.
There's a bit of a scramble of just like the site again to get the section. If you're ever out there, like the road is already set aside, we maintain it, we keep the weeds out of it, like it winds through there, it's all ready. I'd say it's pretty close to shovel ready, but funding just isn't what we need, unfortunately, to get all that done.
Is there a reason why this particular section is so expensive, or is it just overall expenses?
It's the overall expense.
It's overall.
Well, and it's the bridge too, right?
Are they going to do culverts?
Yeah, that's me.
Still.
So expensive.
Yeah. They're big culverts.
So that's a watch for Termini at Rachel Drive. Is it going to drive south on that road to connect in where we need to go? I mean, or north and go over? Is that? I'm just looking at the
Rachel's a big road, so I think think that works. But without the developer being ready to go, that is tough. How far along are they in the design? I think there's going to be a design period, right?
For the developer?
No, for the project.
For our project?
Yeah.
So they just barely started into the design when they realized that they didn't have enough money. And they said, wait, we got to time out and rethink this, what we're going to do. So they paused that design process at this point.
I think we're seeing a little bit of development kind of changing. It's always changing in Southern Utah. You know,
right.
We'd love it to be consistent, but it's not. So I do agree that with the commissioner's notes, comment that maybe we need to just tie something to that so that it's filled out at the same time, at least that it's contingent one to the other.
But will that mean that there's funding
that
has to be spent now?
Yeah, to Kirk's point, we can't do that. Because if the developer doesn't, by the end of the fiscal year, we lose, then this money goes away, right?
Do you have to use it by year?
It's smaller, but funds.
It's smaller, but we need to obligate those funds, so they need to be obligated. So that can, there'll be a certain portion obligated to design, and there's a portion obligated to construction, which is the major portion. We can shoot for being this over now. We're in the federal fiscal year 27. Well, we will be in after October 5th, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So there's a good chance that we can have this obligated if they make this decision. They go to design and get this, you know, advertised next summer. Then it's obligated and it's good.
So can we do that? Well, show us obligated if we do a contingent.
That's the thing is like.
That's contingent upon whenever they're ready. Yeah. So, no.
Well, they can start the design even though they're not ready, right? It's going to go in eventually, correct?
Yeah. 100%.
So they could go into design, it's just, it doesn't make any sense to construct it until the other goes in.
And I can argue with that a little bit, that we just want to get the Emma Parkway in as much as possible, just for helping traffic flow in that area. So, you know, just getting the stuff going. Is like a good faith effort of us that we want to help our residents get around better.
There is Red Mountain Drive next to.
Right.
That wouldn't go nowhere, right?
Yeah.
And maybe that's reason enough to go ahead and move forward, the fact that it does connect through Red Mountain Drive.
Sometimes you just need to get something started and get it in place, and then the rest of them come in.
Yeah.
It's
just a little bit different because, you know, contingent on that developer project, we normally would say, hey, let's start down here on Resident Boulevard and go, because then you're connected in.
It's just a little bit different.
The perspective, I can understand what they're saying. It's just
what's your rationale on doing that end versus the other end?
So doing the lower section of this doesn't really add any, it's a little more circulation, but in terms of, like, moving people across the county, it doesn't do anything. Still connecting back into all the current systems. This would be a whole new way to get out to
Small Canyon Parkway.
Small Canyon Parkway.
When the Western Corridor connects into Highway 91, then that, the rest of it will be really important to get done.
Yeah. This is the Western Corridor right here. Yeah. Literally, this is our section.
It's part of it.
So I can see the concerns for sure.
I'm still waiting on a developer that he committed to 2 years ago and changed his priorities. So I'm a little gun shy when it comes to developers.
You never can tell, but Black Desert has proven to be a good partner. I would say, as far as developers go, at least Patrick seems to have unending funds and unending energy to just move forward. So if it's a delay, it's things like this, it's months, not years.
Any other discussion? Questions?
Just one, is this on both cities' transportation master plans? I know the mayor said it's on Santa Clara.
Yes.
Okay, I'd entertain a motion if somebody wanted to make one. ahead, Mayor.
This is item D, correct?
Item D, that's correct.
I propose that we approve the request from Santa Clara for funding Hamlin Parkway, Highway 1 going out to drive.
Okay, got a motion by Mayor Smith, second by Mayor Catlin. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, thank you. Item number E, consideration resolution, urban transportation planning process certification. I think all of you have that, should have that resolution on the table here.
Resolution was emailed out and is... handout here. Resolution fiscal year 2027-01 is formally self-certifies that the Dixie MPO Metropolitan Transportation Planning process complies with all applicable federal requirements, including requirements related to civil rights, accessibility, air quality, disadvantaged businesses, and transportation planning. It also authorizes submission of the certification to UDOT Federal Highway Administration, FTA, as part of the TIP/STIP approval process. And that, and it is effective as of July 1st, 2026. We do this resolution every year to as a self-check to look at our processes and our programs and make sure that we're still doing everything that we should. This is one of the documents that Kelly helps me to write every year and correct if it needed to be. So thank you for that. But we are looking for a motion to approve this resolution.
Any questions you have on resolution? Okay, I'd entertain a motion. Motion by Commissioner Snow, second by Mayor Jarrett. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay. Item number E, presentation from Horrocks on travel demands model.
Aaron.
Just a little behind you, Aaron.
Ignore the date there. Myron, I have an adapter in my office for the thumb drive if you have me to go grab it.
I think we're just about there.
I know that you've had some presentations on the traffic model and what goes into a traffic model, socioeconomic data, information that kind of puts the model together. So a lot of the inputs you probably learn more about I want to concentrate more on the outputs, but and just some just show you some examples. But the inputs themselves are critical. We're going through some socioeconomic data right now, talking with all the cities, making sure that they learn or they understand and feel that they are confident with the traffic analysis zones of how their land uses are laid out. We've put in the transportation network, which is the road system, and make sure that that's correct and that they're happy with how this network is showing and the classification of each road. All that's so critical to a model so it knows where to put the communities. Where people are starting from, where they're going, that information is also critical for a model to know. Freight, commercial data, we also have our growth rates, which we have to keep a close, a really close magnifying glass on, because it's significant and it makes a big difference on a model if you don't get that right. And we make efforts about every 4 years to do a model calibration to make sure that the model is still performing the way it should, and there's always updates that come through the software. So there's, and we also will do ground counts, traffic counts on the ground to make sure that whatever information is coming out of the model is making sense that's on the ground. So anyway, that's just kind of a some of the inputs into our model. But I have four examples specifically I want to show about some outputs. What do we use this model for? A lot of folks will say, yeah, we hear about the model, but we really don't know what it does. All you tell us what, you give us a list of 150 projects, and what does that mean? What are these projects? Where do they come from? What's justifying all these projects? First one I want to talk about real quick is Mall Drive Bridge. It's right now, it's a five-lane bridge, so it's two lanes in each direction and a two-way left turn lane in the middle. And just looking at what would happen with the traffic if we made a seven-lane bridge, two lanes in each direction. And just to kind of give you an idea of what you're even looking at here, the bridge is right here. And the red lines are where these roads will increase in traffic. The green lines are where they will decrease in traffic if you have seven lanes on that bridge. And there's a number beside these numbers. Beside these lines are probably not as important as the thickness of the line. You can see that it's quite thick here. So it says 4,900. So 4,900 vehicles per day would use a seven-lane bridge.
I don't know where that is.
Yeah, everyone know where Mile Drive Bridge is. New Smith is here. Lynn's is here.
The temple is down there.
Temple's
1450
down there.
On that side. Yeah, there.
Actually, it's right here.
Yeah.
Let's go to the next one, Myron, and we'll... So this is a different map that shows the level of service.
And
so these are...
The colors are different.
The colors are different. This means a little bit more to traffic engineers, where we're looking at, well, we see there's going to be a lot of traffic going up on Mall Drive, but we look at this map and it's green, so we're thinking, okay, well, things are, that Mall Drive can accept those new cars that we're going to put on. Here on the Mall Drive Bridge itself, the yellows represent, you're starting to see a little bit more congestion, a little more pressure. Level service B is what we call it. The red is, there's two lines, one's in one direction and the other is the other direction. The red is you're reaching capacity. That's about as many cars as you can put on this road. And this is during a PM, I forgot to tell you who this was. This is in 10 years, in 2036, during a PM peak. So when everybody's heading home from work, and this is what we forecast will be happening. So the red is you're reaching capacity as people are going from this direction over towards that direction. So this is the five lanes. So looking at seven lanes, just calling out a few things that a seven-lane bridge would do. You increase traffic on Riverside Drive, which is obvious. You're just trying to get more vehicles here. You can see the red lines disappeared on the bridge. So it's all it's busy, and there's some feeling of congestion. But the breakdown has gone away on the bridge itself. But you're adding a lot of cars on Riverside. You're decreasing traffic on River Road, which is always a plus, because River Road, I think on all of these scenarios, River Road is an element of every one of these discussions. So you're decreasing the traffic on River Road, kind of south of the Virgin River, decreasing traffic on George Washington Boulevard, that's really the alternative. If this is too crowded, people will move and go and take this route. This is kind of the pressure-reducing valve for them. You're increasing traffic on George Washington Boulevard here, decreasing it in this section, increasing it here, and increasing traffic on 3000. Of course, this is it's just you have more opportunity to use more lanes, so people are trying to make their way there. So there's more vehicles there. So that's kind of an output study of this particular scenario of putting seven lanes on Mile Drive.
Can I ask, just isn't the future growth going to be mainly south of that?
There's talks of high growth.
Yeah, I'm just thinking why you would look at that one rather than do a George Washington.
Well, this is just a scenario of what we would do under this circumstance with this bridge.
Okay.
Since George Washington Bridge isn't open yet, that might be something we would look at in the future once we start seeing the patterns emerging on that bridge.
Aaron, do you want us to ask questions during or wait till the end?
No, right up, please.
When you do this modeling, is there a way to forecast for the fact that traffic patterns can completely change if cars change? Does that make sense? Or like, we just assuming that what we've seen in the past is what we're going to see in the future when we do this modeling?
We do look at the history of growth and of how people and behavior of how people drive. So there, we do rely a lot on the past, on history, on the growth. And the socioeconomic data helps us to know what's going to happen in the future, because the governor's office of planning and budget helps us to know what's going to happen in the future. And so that's what mostly gets plugged in here.
I guess my question is more like, if travel patterns completely change, if cars change, I guess autonomous driving, or cars can drive closer to each other.
Yeah.
And we end up with way too many roads. Like, is there any way for us to consider that as we're modeling?
Too many roads.
Yeah.
Well, that
hurt.
Yeah.
too wide of roads. I mean, think about it. If you look along there, a seven-lane road is a freeway.
Well, this is just looking at what we're doing today.
Right.
Yeah. It's not looking at future cars that are connected. And smart cars that reduce your headway from one vehicle to another and just make it so there's only 5 feet instead of 25 feet between each car.
And
so that's kind of a future.
Really,
technology.
Really quickly, we have talked with our other MPOs along the Wasatch Front up in Logan about exactly what you're talking about. If we change the way we get around, what does that do to our road system? And we have an emerging technologies element in our model that we can toggle on and off, but we're still struggling to understand exactly what those changes could be and what effect they would have. For example, if we switch over to autonomous vehicles as a society, wherein the cars are driving themselves and we're all just passengers in those cars, it will actually increase the number of vehicles on the road. Because instead of me driving one car from my office to the pizza shop to home, I would call the pizza shop and order a pizza to be delivered to my home, and then I would travel to my home. And I mean, if you multiply that by multiple trips, and we've also noticed in areas where autonomous vehicles have been modeled and utilized, some just quirky things in there. Yes, we can on freeways, on high capacity roads, we can tie cars together and decrease the following distance and whatnot. But that creates other issues. And it, there's a whole study that's out there. We're looking at it. We're trying to understand it. The neat thing about the model is that we update the thing every 4 years. And we anticipate that we'll be able to see these things coming and work them into the model at the appropriate time. But Aaron's right. Right now, we don't have a lot of that data to go on because we're still trying to find it and invent it.
I realize this is a scenario, but the one thing that jumps out is you got increased traffic, Sandia, 3000 East and George Washington Boulevard. In the scenario, how is it, have you gone forward enough to kind of see what how that impact is going to be alleviated on the east side of this, or is it just this is just a
over right here?
Yeah.
Very tight.
No.
George.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's. This is just kind of a
I know it's just
an example. Yeah, there's impacts throughout the entire region. I didn't really talk too much more about the east side, but
so I'm just wondering on that on the study, like if you're on River Road, you can go north on River Road at 5 o'clock. Most days you just kind of come south. So I'm just wondering, like, hypothetically where the traffic's coming and going, is it X people in the hurricane? Is it people travelers from St. George home to work are coming back? Because you look at lane splitting and some stuff like that.
Are you talking about directional, changing the lanes? You got three in one direction in the morning.
Because River Road, you can go up, you can go north on at 5 o'clock. It's just if you're going to go south between 4 and 7, you just are looking to go to Reform Master or around the hill or something.
There are communities that have done that with a lot of roads. I know of some of them off that front that do it that way. I don't know of any of the southern utilities.
That
center turn lane is you could use it, but you'd still have to widen it because there's not enough on the side still to accommodate bikes because there are bike designated bike lanes. Yeah, we want to try to keep those.
Getting back, you're just showing how the modeling works, correct?
Yeah. That's right. That's what we're doing. Okay, let's go to the next one. Formaster Drive. This one's an interesting one. How about you use Formaster Drive on a regular basis? Let's see if you can.
Yeah.
So what we wanted to do here was look at the difference again. It's a three-lane road right now. It's a major collector. That's all it's ever supposed to be with a three-lane road. But we were looking at five lanes, and there may not be room for that. This is just guys in the back room looking at, hey, what about this option? What about this idea?
Okay. Just a quick comment I should have made at first. So these scenarios, we're not proposing them. They're not on a master
correct
plan.
Right.
Yeah.
So there might
we're analyzing
to a hypothetical, but we don't actually.
These are not the actual droids you're looking for.
Well, to that point, then, when you're doing the analysis, I mean, we know how roads affect our economy,
mm-hmm.
right? So
mm-hmm.
if you get a really wide road and people can't get off, or they can't get off for a distance, then there's small shops along there, and those shops suffer, right? Because people can't easily turn in. So is that part of your modeling also, is kind of like the way that our cities are affected socioeconomically by the expansion or contraction of our
road? They definitely was impacted by that. The function of the road, for one, is there's some roads that you shouldn't have driveways with small distances on, like a Bluff Street. Section of the Bluff Street where there are hardly any driveways at all. St. George Boulevard is kind of its own function. I think it's written its own book on the number of accesses. There's like 90 accesses in a mile on that road, something I had counted one time. But
that's super unusual for the type of function that that road is supposed to have.
And that's a good example because a lot of our businesses suffer along there because people they're not out on foot. Like we have a lot of businesses that for it to function the best economically, it needs to be like Santa Clara Main Street, right? Like smaller and tighter. So that's just the question that I have for the future is that part of the modeling?
Yeah, I think most of the cities in the room have a road like that. It could be Telegraph Street, it could be any road that they think about a lot. It's their living room. What are they going to do with that road? To attract people to come to the town, but it still has to conduct traffic, so what do you do?
Yeah, that's why it's so important that your land use maps are updated because it's destination driven.
Yeah.
So if you have certain high density, low density, commercial, industrial zoning, you know, all the zonings you have, the model is destination driven, so it knows that this would be a commercial, that is a place that people go, and it takes that into account as well.
But I think to Daniel's point, like not destination, but neighborhood, like you don't go out to Desert Coast or go to In-N-Out, you go to the small businesses. It's what the Boulevard used to be. Like you look at the east end of St. George Boulevard, it suffers because of that. Because it has become a freeway.
That's one of those things is you look at all those options, and that's what they're doing here, is you look at them, and so you have to see what the cause and effect, and that's the output he's talking about. And if the output is negative, then you have to look at another alternative for it. And you just keep going through that process until you get it. And then you're going to have to look at all the side effects, but somewhere you have to have the traffic flow too, so which is higher.
So. Well, this is not done in a silo, right? You're meeting with the area that you're doing with to find out what their issues are and try to model for that.
You plan for those issues because they're coming.
Yeah, I just wanted to mention that in the model, especially for the MPO's long-range plan, we are inputting your land use plans, and so it's really important for us to meet with these people. So I guess there's a case where we could input different land uses, but what we do is we use what you are doing, what you're planning in all of your cities.
I guess just to add on that is normally it's why there's going to be in cities, there's in UDOT, like we can't expand roads any longer. There has to be alternative modes. It has to be bus services, train service. There's got to be alternative things because the roads just not going to be the answer for everything in our future.
That should happen years ago. I was going to support hoverboard. Okay, so four master drivers. Let's go ahead and look at that one. So why do this to five lanes? And I didn't get Cameron's permission on this, so he's just going to pretend like this isn't even happening.
Those people would really love this too.
Oh, the residents going over the hill?
Yeah. Well, what's intriguing about this road is you have a pretty sweet arterial down here that gets underutilized.
Yes.
And this is another example. You can see there's more people that you want to use Formaster, but even fewer are using Riverside. So these are the types of, I guess, the side effects of doing a scenario like this to say, well, wait a minute, we want people on Mall Drive up here, we want people on Riverside, so what's this doing? It's kind of creating more congestion or more cars on a collector, a local collector. Down by this is the hospital is right here. We'll kind of orient you a little bit. There's 5,800 cars more will be right around the hospital area, and we kind of have there's a pedestrian crossing idea there that's been going on, and there's some connections of the hospital through this road that this isn't a good thing for them without having some kind of a grade separated way of people crossing the street.
It also looks like you included the improvements to 700 South.
You'll see this. So this is in a future model.
Yeah.
In 10 years, we have this in there. doesn't necessarily mean that's going to happen in the 10 years, but that's the way that this model is set up. But you can see this is also read through here, so it's more people because of that width that are using similar sounds.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it impacts, you know, kind of far away roads. It doesn't help River Road much. This is already kind of in a congested state, so it's putting more folks on River Road. So once you hit our slide, I think there's some summary pieces here that we can look at.
Trying to get it to advance here.
All right, so this is just circling the area. It did have, I think in the eastbound direction it was red, so it's kind of already in congestion. Without it, it helps it. It brings it back up into yellow, to green and yellow. And that may help this road, but what does it do to everything else? You decrease traffic in Riverside, and again, that's probably not the goal that we want. We kind of want people to use this road if possible. It increased traffic on 7th South, as the commissioner had mentioned. He saw this was more people were coming over here. It increases traffic on 100 South. We wouldn't have predicted that without the model, because 100 South is another one of those roads that we want to try to keep movement going on, but not get overly congested. It increases traffic on River Road on the north side, which I had mentioned, and decreases traffic on, this is supposed to be Mall Drive, so it decreases this, and there's lots of capacity on Mall Drive right through here. It's also an arterial street. That's where we want people to be. Do we want them on this collector street, or do we want them on the arterials in the neighborhood? And those are the important questions. It also increases the traffic on the Mall Drive Bridge and on Riverside along the street.
Ready for the next slide.
Washington Parkway. This is just with or without that corridor. Some people ask that a lot. You know, they want to know what kind of traffic is going to be or not going to be. So let's go ahead and look at that one, Myron. So this is you can see the northern corridor, Washington Parkway. It's bright red. It would be well used. And another that will be well used is this connection road that goes to Turkey Farm Road. It has several names. But there's a lot of green in this area. It's taking a lot of traffic off of a lot of areas here, like on Bluff Street, St. George Boulevard, Red Hills Parkway, and Sunset. So if you'll show us the next one, we can kind of drill down into some of the numbers. So with Washington Parkway, these are the daily. This is 20. We changed years on you. This is 2055. So this is another 30 years from now.
I can't wait.
You have to wait.
Y'all be married 70 years. So there's 34,600 is up in the upper part here. Snow Canyon Parkway 38.5. 40,000 is what it says here, 40,300 on kind of the north end of Red Hills Parkway. This is kind of its own little area because this is happening whether this road is in or not. This is always here. So this is an interesting number to watch. 13,500 on Red Hills Parkway, which is, it's actually a little bit more than that even today without the road. This is a pretty big number today. 20,700, 18,300 on this little connector, which something will have to be done with that little connector. 8,900, this is another interesting number. It's not a very high number for Red Hills Parkway above the city. Today, I've forgotten the number, but it's around 17,000, I think. And then 38,000, 31,000. Let's just go one more. This is without the road. And what I've done here is the amber colors are the numbers that really were unaffected and didn't change much at all. So this is Buena Vista, 11,900 up on SR 18, 346. But this section that's here, whether the road is here or not, it went down 12,100.
this section went up 17,400. And this number used to be 8,900, now it's 21,900. So the Red Hills Parkway really.
We're
going to
put a toll booth out there in the near future.
Yeah, you can only get a nickel for every one of these cars.
Yeah, we are. Through. Your residents of St. George won't be charged.
See how you are?
Yeah.
We'll stop door to Costco.
I still have citizenship here. I'm born.
We'll give you a pass.
Yeah. Bluff Street, this is as high a number as we have on the model of 72,000 on Bluff Street. And it competes with what's on I-15. It's always been pretty high.
How does that number drop so significantly? Because they peel off and go across Red Hills Parkway. Is that what you're telling me?
This is going up. Show us.
I know, but like, but when you go 34 at the top and then you're 72, is it because those people are going east and west?
Yeah, they find
they're going out to golf.
They're finding other ways to go this direction, and a lot of them are coming. They come this way, and they come into the major streets downtown. So anyway, this was kind of the most obvious model, I think, that Minor and I came up with. What do we do with or without it? And this is an interesting one, too, over in Washington, where it's 4,300 on Washington Parkway over on this side, and it went down 9,300. So we know that that's. There's a lot of capacity on that road to use that.
What question? One of the arguments people make about creating more connectivity, like the Northern Corridor, is that somehow that would just increase overall traffic because people would be able to get places quicker or more conveniently. And I'm seeing in the model that 34,600 didn't change.
No.
Is that just a misnomer? Because if I'm still spending a lot of money on gas, it's still going to cost me the same on gas. Gas prices never seem to go down, they mostly go up. So I don't buy that argument that somehow just because you create more connectivity, the church gets to see more cars on the road because of
that. Unless there's something north of that 3460 that drove that number. But right now there is. Yeah, that would change.
Okay. Yeah, this is kind of out of the influence of this road that's, you know, kind of happening in here. This is kind of an external area.
So Natalie, that's part of the problem on the boulevard, right? When you talk about the east side of the boulevard, they're not going there for the businesses. They're going there to try and get across town. It is a highway because there's no other way to get across.
And there's no really way to turn around to get to that business.
If you want somebody to go to the business, go to the Northern Boulevard, get them off of there. That's just a highway. Now it's used as a business road.
I always wonder if they would cut across
that way. Yeah,
well, I wonder if you're across.
If you just brought back the glaciers, I would go there.
What population increase did you use for the model? 4%, 2%?
We used the numbers from the Gardner Institute.
It's in that realm, though, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
How much, is there any seasonality to any of this? Is there in our area, when the snowbirds come down there to leave, is there a seasonality difference in the model?
There's a seasonal difference.
Is it considerable or just a little?
It's significant, about 20% less, usually, in July versus, March or April. But not on I-15. I-15 is always busier in the summer than in the winter. It's just our local roads are busier. That's a good question.
So, Aaron and Cameron, under construction right now is the new bridge on George Washington.
Yeah.
Are you, obviously, the decision where it is, the impact it'll have on River and Riverside, was all taken into consideration. Popeye is probably like it. The idea was, though, you went through similar things to determine the impact of that bridge to get the funding for it.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, Cameron wouldn't have gone to bat to get that funding if he knew that these results weren't showing much. Let's go to the next one. That's a good segue.
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
Okay.
River Road. Let's talk about this one real quick.
I tried to put that bridge as close to your house, Commissioner, so you can watch through the traffic for us.
Yes. Well, my lemonade stand idea is going to come back.
The rear is at the end after 60 years.
And so what this one is it's with and without George Washington Parkway Bridge.
Okay.
So what does it do to River Road? This is the last one. Probably ready to leave. 2036, good to talk about. We're back down to 2036, so we're 10 years out. So with the bridge, this is the example of the reds. The heavy reds are where the traffic is going to go. This says 12,900. So that's what we would expect in 2036 with this bridge open. And this is the Virgin River right here, the blue. Don't want you to be confused what that is. You can see a lot of, you know, the Dixie Drive area would increase. Bluff Street, there's more going up Bluff Street. There's less, of course, on Riverside, because that's kind of your alternative when you're coming up here. You would, if you're heading in this direction, you'd come on George Washington instead of go up to Riverside. And then George Washington this direction, about 2,000 cars a day more. There's more in the south side, but less on River Road, so this is actually helpful. It's taking some of the burden off of River Road. Why don't you hit that one more time? There's the bridge that we're talking about. And you can see there's two black lines. That's never good in any scenario. it's just failure in both directions in a PM peak hour. So this is the issue, really, that the George Washington Parkway Bridge is solving. It's solving a lot of issues, but that's number one.
When you say failure, does that mean delay in getting across it?
That means there's more demand for the road than there is capacity to meet demand.
Yeah. A lot of slowdowns, a lot of people, multiple lights waiting to get through. And it's just adding, you know, a lot of minutes to get home. A lot of minutes. Some of them are like two and three and four times as much as what it is today. It's going to be that much worse.
So on this, are you showing the underpasses under the freeway?
One of them.
One of them?
Not both of them on this one, but this one here, we're showing one. We didn't put in the 9 South in this scenario. We probably were just a little behind the
other. Yeah, that dream might change in this scenario.
It would be green. Yeah, it would be a green line coming over here.
And Aaron, I assume that this is measuring peak hours.
This is a peak hour.
Afternoon is
5
or what?
Between 4 and 6, right around that time frame.
It's longer the more traffic that's on it.
Yeah, that's kind of the hallmark of how a road is reaching capacity all day, because when it doesn't have a peak anymore, it's just busy all day.
Now, when I was a trooper in Salt Lake, it was 4 to 6 and 7 to 9 in the morning, and now it's pretty much
all the time.
Pick a point.
Okay, this is bridge in place. So you can see that one direction got much better on River Road. The southbound is still black. Northbound is red. So this did get better. Riverside Drive got much better. Decreased traffic on Riverside. Decreased traffic on North River Road, which is, we were talking, is a benefit. But you can kind of still see there's some pressure still here. So it's not like this is going to see a 2 River Road. There's red and yellows and again black over the river. Increased traffic South River Road and increased traffic on George Washington Parkway on that side. So anyway, that's kind of a nutshell of with or without the bridge from the model's perspective. Any questions on what we're doing here and kind of the value of this model?
I have a question. Would you be able to share those slides out with the group? Would that be okay?
I could do that. That'd be fine. They're real projects.
So the purpose of this presentation was not to serve as a decision tool, but rather to illustrate how we use the model to make decisions. As we gone through this, you can see that it might not be a good idea to widen Four Master Drive because of all the impacts that it has. But it would be a good idea to build the George Washington Boulevard Bridge and get across there. But again, this is just an illustration of how we go out there and look at things and say, you know what, is this really a smart thing to do, or is it just wasting gas and time? But there is a tremendous amount of time and energy that Aaron and his folks over at Horrocks do, and that we go through at the MPO to determine what roads of regional significance, what kind of projects they need in the future.
Good job.
Okay. Thanks, Aaron.
The other big takeaway is if you haven't updated your transportation plan, get it updated.
And your zoning maps.
Yeah, zoning too.
Right.
Okay.
Thank you.
I'm
going to call my wife.
Yeah. Happy anniversary. Hopefully you have a 41st.
Okay, item G, review public comments and consider adoption of the 2027-2030 transportation plan and Dixie MPO transit tip.
So briefly, I passed out a handout. This is the tip. We put the tip out for public comment through the month of July. We advertised that as far as we could. We put it on our social media feeds. We put it on our website. We advertised it in the Utah Public Notice website. And we did everything that we could to tell everybody that this is our tip. The projects that are highlighted in yellow are the projects that we added this year. The other projects were added previously. We need to adopt the tip and move it forward in the process. But after all that advertising for comments, I went in and counted the number of comments that we received yesterday, and it's still tied at zero for last year. It was not a hard task to respond to the comments, but we did put a great deal of effort in explaining why these projects were put on the tip and what they are.
Is that comment period still open?
It closed July 31st.
Ah, dang it. I could go in there and like, good job.
Go ahead. It won't matter. At this point in time, we are ready to accept the tip as a document of the MPO. We will then send that up to UDOT, and they will put it in their STIP, so it will be a working document at that point.
Okay. Any questions on plan? I'd have to take a motion to approve it.
So those items had action today, is that updated in this, or would that be amendment?
That would have to be amendment number one.
Okay.
I'll make a motion that we adopt the 2027-2030 transportation improvement plan and Dixie MPO transit tip.
Okay, motion by Councilwoman Martin. Second by Councilman Ivey. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay. All right. To do our local government update, anybody have updates that you'd like to share with us? Over.
Mayor, I might just mention something that happened in Washington that might give interest to the group. We approved an inland port in Washington. And of course, part of that motivation for that is that comes with some funding for infrastructure in and around the area, which specifically is the bridge across Purgatory Bridge north of D.R. Horton, and then the linkage from SR9 to SR7. There was a lot of comment made about it, and I would just say that I'd love to have an opportunity to share the right information. There's a lot put out by the group that opposed the inland port that was not accurate. So we would love to, if there's anyone that has concerns or if you're considering that for your community, I'm excited about the prospect of opening up area that otherwise wouldn't have been available without the bridge and the road. And everyone's heard about the impact of our residents there on the Countryway with the garbage trucks and the haul trucks and that type of thing. So anyway, just wanted to mention that to the group just so you know kind of what's going on.
Thank you. Appreciate the update. Any others? Yeah.
Did you, from UDOT, did you want to talk about the fencing on the LeVarican to Hurricane Bridge?
I wish I had a better update. We still are just working with the contractor and making sure that their design is appropriate for that structure. And preliminary stuff, they didn't have the needed design to be able to give us confidence in the work. It is still a project. We're just working through with the contractor and the designer to make sure that what they're going to build is appropriate for that. Because it wasn't in design for that. So we got to make sure.
Kind of the thinking in that fencing was that it's kind of become a hot spot for people jumping. And so they decided to fence those bridges completely. I don't know really about the list around,
yeah.
But
the data that we get is that if you can dissuade somebody, they usually come with a plan. If you can dissuade them, and their statistics show that may impede them from doing that. If they say, hey, I'm going to jump off this structure, and they have no way, it may stop. We can probably save their life, but it is not the answer for the whole canyon. But
is there design that they're, I haven't seen it yet, is it similar?
It'll be just like, it'll be designed after what's on the outside of the structure, just inside. Other than it's just retrofit, where the other portions will design as part of the bridge, so that's what we're looking for. It was supposed to be done last year.
Well, it's an interesting fact. My wife and I were headed to Salt Lake a few years ago, and we got up the bridge. Traffic kind of slowed down. I looked up just as about 13-year-old kid jumped off stood up on the bridge and just jumped off and was gone. Tell you what, that did stuck with me for a long time. So.
And just protecting our law enforcement to go in and address those situations. It's a very important thing, but it is also the contractor didn't do their part at first. We're waiting for them to.
Who is the contractor?
I'm not exactly sure the contractor's name. I can get that for you.
I'm sure. It's okay.
All right. Any other updates?
Just a quick update. Cameron, since we talked about George Washington Bridge, maybe they'll be curious to know how the timing is.
Yeah, I can mention that. So contractor is JP Excavating on the bridge still. They are working on the bridge deck. There are several sections in there that from abutment to abutment to abutment. And they are working on the bridge deck right now. You can see some spans that they've already got across the abutments. All these rains and stuff, I see pictures, and they didn't get flooded out too bad, but it impacted them a little bit. But we love the rain. We do have, our contract goes until July 15th or something like that next year. But the contractor, JP, has told us, hey, I'm planning on trying to get this bridge done a lot sooner than that. He didn't have some delays because Fish and Wildlife, working with Fish and Wildlife and our Virgin River group, they put some culverts in the river and moved it before the fish window. Started in April, and because of that, that didn't delay them as much as we thought it would. At one point in time, he said, man, I might finish this bridge by the end of the calendar year. And we're like, wait, what? We don't have this bridge done. The roadway started yet. And so that raised our eyebrows a little bit. We did change order some of the riprap protection that needed to happen to keep Judd there for the roadway, so he's been installing that as well. Since then, we finished up the roadway design. We put it out to bid. It will be going to council soon. We really stressed the schedule on the roadway, building the roadway. And so that hopefully will get started soon so that there won't be too much delay when the bridge is done and the roadway is done. In conjunction with that, we saw that there was going to be a delay for the pedestrian bridge over the new roadway because of the mayor's loop. And so we actually, like a month ago, we started the bid process and got that going for the pedestrian bridge. So that one, that's one of the items that just takes a long time to order a bridge and get that construction manufactured so it can show up on site and you can put that on there. On the abutments, but anyway, so we're hoping if nothing fails, then we're hoping to have the roadway done maybe around March-ish next year, depending on the bid award and the contractor. So anyway, thanks for your patience. We're pushing forward still. question.
Thank you. Any other local updates? Not Kurt, you have an update from UDOT?
Based on time, is there any questions? We do have the 6-8 is advertised open up in the beginning of September. We have the climbing lane on Southern Parkway that has been bid, and it'll start construction probably in September. And then we have the southbound passing lane from Harrisburg up to 20, from 16 to 20, that will be advertised, or is advertised, and will be hopefully starting this fall as well. So, what's the update?
6A is the opening in September?
Yeah, it's opening the first week in September, I believe.
Okay. Thank you. Do we have anybody here for federal updates?
Federal updates, real quick. Infrastructure Investment Act will expire September 30th. I believe recess going on. That likely will get a continuing resolution, and December 11th is probably the time that the Build America 250 Act will replace that for a 5-year bill. So that's what we are working on, and hopefully we can get that done. But that will probably buy us 10, 11 weeks or so. 580 billion dollars. I will say that the Highway Transportation Fund, though since 2008 to 2025, they overspend by about 238 million. Congress wrote a check for $275 billion to so there needs to be some serious attention to the Highway Transportation Fund or Trust Fund. That's all I have. Thanks.
Great. Thank you. Anything else?
Come on, say, you know, if you guys ever want to know more about what the MPO is doing, what we're doing, feel free to email me at kelly.lund@dot.gov. If you have a question for Federal Transit Administration, I work closely with them, so you can get in touch with them directly. So if you'd like to know a little bit more about the funding and how it gets here or how the MPO is running, I'm sure both of us, me and Myron, would like to help.
Thank you. I see there are meetings, upcoming meetings for September. Dates for those, wrote those, and nothing else. Ready to adjourn.
Must have got here right in time, because I just walked in the back.